Hello. Come in, come in, come in, do, and make yourselves at home. This is the History of Ideas podcast, where we tackle some of the biggest questions around. This week, we're wondering how technology has changed us. Here's the programme.
In 400 metres, enter the roundabout and take the third exit. Take the third exit.
Oh!
You have reached your destination.
Why do I trust this thing? I'm facing the brick wall of a supermarket and I haven't got the faintest idea where I am.
You have reached your destination.
Like most people, I'm becoming ever more reliant on digital gadgets, from smartphones and sat-nav to software for shopping, banking and keeping in touch with my alleged friends. And like a lot of people, this makes me anxious. I used to pore over my road atlas before a long journey, memorising the route. I used to read road signs and pull over when I saw something interesting. I used to act, in short, like an independent human being. These days, I sometimes feel like a slave to the sat-nav, though I don't get lost as much. So, is my relationship with tech a collaboration or a takeover? Are other once important mental functions rotting through neglect? We're not the first generation to worry about this kind of thing. In Plato's Phaedrus, one of the characters in it has a surprisingly similar tech complaint to mine. He's worried about the invention of writing. This discovery of yours, he says, will create forgetfulness in the learner's souls, because they will not use their memories. They will trust to the external written characters and not remember of themselves. You give your disciples not truth, but only the semblance of truth. They will be hearers of many things and will have learned nothing.
Has technology changed us?
Plato was a Greek philosopher and mathematician in the 4th and 5th centuries BC and one of the most influential thinkers of all time. He wrote his philosophy in dramatic dialogues, often using his friend and teacher Socrates as a character. In this way, he could debate controversial issues of contemporary science, religion and philosophy. He laid many of the foundations of Western philosophy and paved the way for his most famous student, Aristotle. He's also said to have been a keen and talented wrestler.
Has technology changed us?
Plato has popped up on the series before, as you'd expect for the father of Western philosophy. He lived and wrote around Athens at a time when writing itself was a young, radical technology, disrupting a world in which fixing speech onto paper was still considered unnatural. And yet it's only through Plato's work that we know about his own teacher, Socrates, who so distrusted the inanimate, unchanging stuff of writing that he never recorded a word of his own teaching. Here's the character of Socrates speaking again in Plato's Phaedrus. Writing is unfortunately like painting. For the creations of the painter have the attitude of life, and yet, if you ask them a question, they preserve a solemn silence. And if they are maltreated or abused, they have no parent to protect them, and they cannot protect or defend themselves. Hello.
Hello.
Tom, very good to see you.
Likewise.
Sorry, we're having arguments with sat-navs on the way.
I know the feeling.
A little
we have a non-geographical postcode.
that would be really helpful.
Yeah. No, we have 1HG, which is a non-place. It's really 1HA. That is
Tom Standage is the digital editor of The Economist, an author of Writing on the Wall, Social Media, the First 2,000 Years.
Yes, it's a surprisingly modern complaint, actually. It's right at this point where a mainly verbal tradition is starting to give way to increasing literacy. And the Greeks were quite worried about this. And it's a modern complaint in two ways. The first is that if you let people use this technology, they won't remember things properly. And that's very much what people say about Google today. It does seem to be true. There are studies suggesting that people don't remember as much trivia because they know they can Google it later. And the Greeks, of course, had these rather elaborate memory palace techniques that allowed them to remember very complicated things. And I think partly it's a concern that that skill would be lost, as indeed it has been. But I'm not sure that's a terrible thing because it's much easier just to look in books or now use Google. And the other way it's a modern sounding complaint is that essentially it's saying that texts are inferior to learning things through conversation and through debate and through dialogue because texts aren't interactive. And the complaint that something isn't interactive enough is not something you expect to find in Greek texts, but that's exactly what it is. But yes, the idea is that you only really understood an argument if you were able to test it and interrogate it literally, and that a text didn't let you do that.
The Greeks were worried that we lost parts of ourselves when we outsourced things like memory to written technology. And I wonder if you feel there's anything that we don't even know we're losing that we might sort of mourn if we noticed it going. That there's anything, there's babies being thrown out with the digital bathwater today.
I may soon lose the ability to, you know, drive a car with a stick shift because I have an automatic car now. The fact that I'm starting to lose that skill, is that a terrible tragedy? I'm not sure it is. I mean, it was a bit of a pain to have to do it in the first place. So I'm quite optimistic about this. I don't see a great kind of terrible reconfiguration of human nature. I just think a whole load of things that used to be a bit of a chore are going to go away.
Some people, though, have argued that there's a sort of dangerous self-fulfilling prophecy in allowing machines to do too much for us, in that automation treats us a bit like idiots or children.
Yeah, I'm not quite sure. I mean, if my car could drive itself, I'd be able to, you know, appreciate the surroundings more easily, and I'd be able to read a book or do whatever I wanted to do. You could say the car is infantilizing me, but you could also say, well, why did I ever really have to drive it in the first place? I think driving cars is one of those things that will come to appear morally unacceptable in 20 years' time. We'll say, God, we can't believe we put people in charge of these one-ton pieces of metal, and, you know, they used to drive around killing each other, and we used to tolerate this. So I don't think that's infantilizing me at all. I think it's actually a good thing.
So it's a process that's been going on for centuries. We develop new technology that helps us communicate or takes over a tedious task, and in the process we lose things. Is the awesome computing power I carry around in my smartphone an upgraded extension of my mind? And what if I were to take the next step and start building that power into my body?
What I've got in this jar, which I'm pulling out now, is a radio frequency identification device. As you see, it's about an inch long and quite small, little glass tube.
Kevin Warwick is Professor of Cybernetics at Reading University. He pulls up his shirt sleeve to show me three small scars on his left arm. They're the record of his efforts to connect technology directly to his nervous system.
One exactly the same was implanted in my upper left arm, just above the elbow. And what it did, quite simply, was identify me to the computer in my building. As I came through the front door, the computer would say, "Hello, Professor Warwick." And then going down the corridor, the lights would come on, going to my lab, the door would open. So it was tremendous fun.
Another implant in his arm allowed Kevin to communicate in a series of electrical pulses with his wife. A third controlled a rather frightening-looking robotic hand in Berkshire while he was in the United States. His current research is designed to help sufferers of debilitating conditions like Parkinson's disease. But Kevin thinks we can all benefit from internal technology.
I approach it from a very practical point of view, increasing your, if you like, natural abilities by directly linking with technology. That's how I would see it.
And is there an end point here? I mean, do you think everybody is going to have implanted technology? Or do you think there's going to be a point at which people say, well, that's enough. I don't want to kind of outsource and integrate anymore with machines?
I really don't think there's going to be we're going to stop there. That's a very Luddite approach, I think. But then if you take what Stephen Hawking's been saying, machines getting more intelligent, it will be them making all the decisions. So there is also the argument, if you can't beat them, join them. If we just stay as ordinary humans, we're going to be taken over by machines. And therefore, if we upgrade by linking with technology, maybe we can still stay in the driving seat. You know, maybe there's an answer to intelligent machines by humans upgrading.
And if this upgrading, you know, ended up with you being, you know, a brain inside a kind of robotic frame, is that something you would think, yeah, okay, if that's what it takes, I'd go for that?
Well, you have to say, when you look at the physical human body, do we actually need it? It's a bit of a problem. A lot of the illnesses for humans are due to your body wearing out. If we didn't have a physical body, we wouldn't have a problem.
And I wonder, you know, whether there's a point at which people stop being entirely human, or we have to change what human means.
If we look to the future where you're having all sorts of new mental abilities particularly, then we have to look, well, are you still a human? Probably not. The science fiction terminology is that you become a cyborg, part human, part machine. That's only, I think, when the machine part takes you out of what would normally be required to be a human, as it were.
When we're talking about cyborgs and science fiction, a lot of people can imagine the human species sort of splitting up, that not everyone is going to want to extend themselves. I mean, can you see a world in which we have, you know, different sort of classes of human coexisting or not coexisting?
Yes, I mean, if there are those that don't wish to be upgraded, they want to stay as an ordinary human, then for sure. But what's going to happen to them in the future, I don't know, because we're looking at the future cyborgs as being far more intelligent. They're going to have part machine brains with all the abilities of those, be able to communicate in new ways, have new sensory input. So technologically, they're going to be far superior to ordinary humans that haven't upgraded. So they would become something of a subspecies, I would believe, that the human that doesn't upgrade. If you want to stay part of the action, you have to upgrade.
Enter the roundabout and take the second exit.
I really wish I could be as comfortable as Kevin with the dissolving boundary between us and our machines, but something keeps pulling me back.
200 metres, turn right.
What's clear is that a new relationship with technology demands our most careful assessment yet of what it means to be human, and to be constantly extending and enhancing the capacities of our minds and bodies. And for me, to truly love technology and its possibilities means not an uncritical embrace, but making informed choices. And just like any healthy relationship, we need time apart as well as time together.
I said, in 200 metres, turn right.
Shut up, you stupid machine.
I'm sorry, Tom. You're in charge. For now.
Thought-provoking stuff. That was the History of Ideas podcast, brought to you by the lovely people at BBC Radio 4 and the Open University. And if that programme left your brain hungry for more ideas, you can listen to the whole series on the BBC iPlayer. You can also watch a whole host of brilliant short animations narrated by Harry Shearer, Gillian Anderson, and even yours truly, delving into the minds of some of the world's greatest thinkers. Find out about the golden ratio, perhaps, or whether we really have free will. Just search online for History of Ideas. See you next time.